2 weeks ago, we had a great Valentine's Day at the Fiedler household. I think I shared with you that I get up much earlier on Sunday morning, and so I left my Valentine card for my wife, Sydney. I left it up there on the mantel right by the front door where she would be sure and see it. And I also had a tin of Hershey's Kisses there, and so I was really good in the thoughtfulness department. Later that evening, we would have a great meal at a nice steakhouse, and we had some great conversation and time together, and that was really made for a special time. But what really made our Valentine's Day was, in fact, what we agreed made it probably the most special Valentine's Day ever for us, was going to see the Jesters musical, Time Will Tell. Our son Jacob attended with us, and we were just really moved by this performance. The music was great, the acting was so well done, and it's not just the saying the lines and putting on, I mean, the play worked well, and it was written by the cast and so well directed, but it was also the spirit that was embodied by the ensemble cast. The director had gone out in advance and had explained that the audience has an important role in a jester's presentation, because you've got to understand that the actors are doing their very best and they're putting themselves on the line for you there, but they might forget a line or they might do something incorrectly, but you need to encourage them through it. And when you think about it, that kind of applies to almost everything we do, doesn't it? I mean, I don't know anybody who doesn't go out and make a mistake or do something wrong, and I don't know anybody who doesn't welcome the affirmation and encouragement of those around them. And our senior minister, Paul Rasmussen, if you were able to go see the musical, Paul was in the play, and he had shared with me after the first performance that being behind the curtain really gave him a whole different perspective, because he said this was the initial presentation Saturday night, and he said that all the actors were wondering, will anybody come? Is there anybody out there? And they were all peeking through the curtain, looking out to see, had anybody come to see it? Or, you know, what if the whole auditorium there was empty? Alan, have you ever wondered that before a presentation? I don't know anybody who doesn't wonder that, you know? And then in addition, they gather together, the cast, in a circle before the production, and they share what the musical means to them. And they share their thoughts and feelings and maybe any fears or apprehensions they might have. And together, bound together with those ties that bind, they're able to have courage together and go out and put on this performance. And they did a marvelous job, and we were very moved. And I've got to tell you, when the cast in the play, they sang The Church is One Foundation. And it worked very well for the play, and it was very moving as part of the play. But in addition, it worked for me on another level, as I saw a number of special needs adults and youth that were standing on the stage singing to us The Church is One Foundation. And it said to me, you know, they are claiming this church. These men and women are claiming this church as their own. And some of that had to do with the fact that this church had claimed them as its own and welcomed them and removed barriers. Because the truth of the matter is, if we are not about the business of removing barriers, then we don't have any business expecting that everybody's going to be able to show up. And let me talk to you about this in the scripture. We have a very short passage out of the book of Acts. It says, if you want to follow along in the bulletin, and so my judgment is that we should not make it difficult for the Gentiles who are turning to God. May the Lord bless the reading of this word. Let me give you the context of that. As you know, Paul was about the business of going out and founding churches, and Paul was ministering to Gentiles, meaning non-Jews. And one of the challenges for the early church, so many of the Christians were Jews who converted or were following Christ. It was Christ Jesus, of course, was a Jew, but he had a different type of covenant that they were following and embracing. But they took along with them the same food laws, the same understanding of the Jewish law, the same appreciation of the Hebrew scriptures. But Paul was ministering to Gentiles. And they were asking him, you know, do we really have to observe the food laws? Does the same law of the Sabbath, Is that apply to us? What about this circumcision thing? So they talked about it, and Paul and Peter had a vehement disagreement. They totally disagreed. Peter said, absolutely, it's binding. Yes, the law, they need to, it all applies to them. You need to teach it all. And Paul said, no, that will be a barrier to them. And we know that the primary thing is the grace of God that we have in Jesus Christ. That's what we are saved by faith in grace alone. So they had to go in front of the Council of Jerusalem in 50 AD, and they made their respective cases, and the council made a decision, and they found for Paul and said, we're going to remove most of these barriers. Now, some of them will still apply, the ritual sacrifices, the meat that you eat, it still has to be kosher. You know, there's still, you know, we're going to ban fornication, that's probably a good idea, and adultery, those types of things. And it's not like we're setting aside the Ten Commandments altogether, but the ritual uncleanliness that we find in Leviticus and in the Hebrew Scriptures, that will not apply to the Gentile converts. And what that says to me is Paul was about the business of removing barriers. You know, sometimes have you ever tried to endeavor to do something and you feel like as soon as you set that goal, that the whole world sets obstacles before you? I've always thought it was an amazing accident of timing that no sooner does the season of Lent begin, you have Ash Wednesday, and you make these bold proclamations, and some of us are prone to saying, I'm not going to eat chocolate, I'm not eating sweets for Lent, knowing that it's not about law, but you want to show that you have self-discipline and you can do it. And no sooner does that happen than you go to church or there's a knock on your door, and there's the little Girl Scout delivering all your Thin Mints. And you know, what is it about the demonology or whatever in which the spirit becomes animated and you put those Thin Mints over on the shelf and you would swear they're calling out to you, you know? And you can't eat just one, can you? I don't mean just one cookie. You can't eat just one sleeve. You got to eat the other sleeve also. You got to knock off that box. So, you know, we've got to remove barriers to people. So maybe it's not a good idea to have Girl Scout cookies delivered during the season of Lent. We don't do ministry in a vacuum. We assess the needs of people around us in the community, around the world. And of course, we have noticed, and in 2000, somebody noticed that, you know, there are families with persons who have special needs. And I emphasize the word family because if you're a family that has even just one member with special needs, you are a family. It's a family dynamic. And you're a family that has some special challenges in dealing with that. And in response, they created night owls to give a respite, or I'd like to use the word to give a family a break. To give parents an opportunity, if you will come by the church, then we will embrace your special needs family member, and we will have time with them, and we will teach them and have a good time while you go out and do something else, and just have a break as a couple, or have a break as a family. So the church sought to reach out to them, and in doing that, they learned about this target group that they wanted to minister to, that there's different subgroups within the title special needs. There are persons with genetic disorders, there are persons who have behavioral issues, persons who are medically fragile, and persons who are physically challenged. And all of this translates into special logistical issues. It may be access issues of just how to get into the sanctuary in the first place. It may be how to relate. It may be communication challenges. And how do you do that? I remember as a little boy, we lived over on Euclid Avenue right by Byron. And our next door neighbor had a boy named Freddie Cobb. And Freddie was older than me, but we played all the time. He related to me really well. And in retrospect, I really realized that Freddie was a special needs kid. And he was different in a way, but he was also related in such a wonderful way, and he was a good friend. And when I came to downtown Dallas in 1997, I went to that home. My grandparents' house had been torn down, but the Cobb house was there. I walked up, and Mrs. Cobb, without even looking, said, "It's not for sale." I said, "Mrs. Cobb, I'm not here to buy your house. I don't know if you remember me. I'm Johnny Fiedler." And she said, "Yes, I remember you." And I asked her, I said, well, tell me about Freddie. And finally I said, does Freddie go to church? And she said, yes, he goes to a church downtown that has a special needs ministry. And I felt badly that that wasn't the church I was serving because we didn't have that. So I really celebrate that this church has a special needs ministry in which you have taken care and nurture to be accepting and to remove barriers so that special needs persons can come and be a part of this family of faith. I mean, when you think about it, what does the word normal mean anyway? I'm not sure that it has a lot of validity. We all are assigned a stack of traits. We all have our double helix of DNA that says that some of us are athletic, others are not. Some of us can sing really well, others of us can't carry a tune. Alan wouldn't let me in the choir if I wanted to be. He'd say, John, do us a favor and go find your ministry elsewhere. You know? We all have different traits. And we're all unique. I'm really not sure what does it mean to have a set of traits and characteristics where you say, well, that's normal, you're normal. Or somebody else and say, that person is not normal. We're all so different and we're all so unique. There was a story in the New York Post this past week, and it had a link to a viral video on YouTube. And it was made by a dad who'd gone into a video store to get a video. He's a father of a boy who has Down syndrome. His son was not with them, but he was in the video store, and he overheard another father and son. The boy was looking at a video, and it featured a Down syndrome child in the movie. And the boy said to his father, Dad, what is Down syndrome? And the father thought for a moment and said, it's an illness where somebody doesn't know anything. And the response, and the father says, he knows the father wasn't trying to be hurtful, and he didn't insert himself into the conversation between a father and a son, but he went out to his car, and he took his phone, and he made a video of himself, and he said, you know, this is really hard for me. It's really hard for me to hear that, and now I'm mad at myself because I didn't share and correct his misunderstanding of Down syndrome. Because first of all, it's not an illness. It's just a characteristic. And I would like to share with them that the Down syndrome, as far as it affects my son, is a very beautiful thing. It's a wonderful thing. It's a cuddly thing. It's a loving thing. It's an inquisitive thing. And it's been a real blessing to our household. Because my son teaches me something every day, even as we seek to teach him. And I think that's a good way to put it. We all can learn and we all can teach. And as I walked out of the Wesley Hall after the Time Will Tell musical, I said, I just learned something. What a bold witness. As these actors were willing to go up and put themselves on the line and overcome any apprehensions or concerns. And then I would look myself in the mirror and said, well, you need to up your game, buddy. You're allowing too much. Oh, well, but what if somebody said this? Or what if they reacted this way? Oh, that would be the end of the world. That'd just be awful. But these actors, these special needs persons, have the courage to go out and do their very best and let the chips fall where they may. And I think there's a lesson in that. They teach us courage. You may remember the movie Children of a Lesser God with William Hurt and Marley Matlin. I looked it up, I'd forgotten about it, but it's a story of a woman who is deaf, who's at a school for the deaf, and her teacher falls in love with her. It's a beautiful love story. But as I remembered that movie, I thought about the title. What does that mean, Children of a Lesser God? And I said to myself, surely, please tell me, surely they're not trying to say that anyone who has a quote-unquote disability would be someone who's been created by a God who is lesser than the God who created us. So I did some research. I said, where did that line come from? Well, it came from a poem by Alfred Lord Tennyson. And his poem is actually an epic poem about King Arthur. He was the poet laureate of England. So he wrote a very nationalistic, patriotic poem about England. But in the poem, King Arthur is lamenting the fact that he tried to create the perfect society in Camelot, and they never quite get there. There's always a fallenness, a fallen dimension to his creation of Camelot. And so he blames it on God eventually. And he says these words, I found God in the shining of the stars, and I marked God in the flowering of the fields, but in his ways with people I find him not. I waged his wars, and now I pass and die. Oh me, for why is all around us here as if some lesser God had made the world, but had not forced to shape it as he would, till the high God behold it from beyond and enter it and make it beautiful? And reading those words, it dawned on me, he's talking about redemption. That as a flawed creation in need of a Savior, in need of redemption, and as the community of faith, we point to Christ and say, therein lies our redemption. Christ redeems a fallen world, and we look forward to the time of the ultimate consummation of God's kingdom in which we will be perfected. We go on to perfection. In the meantime, we do the best we can. All of us, whether we have disabilities or not, we're just doing the best we can. Here on the insert you see, we have, we're talking about night owls, in which we give a break on a Friday evening. We have jesters, which is the acting troupe. We have crosswalk, which is a special needs Sunday school class. We have the feast every Sunday at 5 o'clock. Ramsey Patton preaches a worship service for a special needs constituency and their families. And then you heard Paul talk about the plan for Biggers, the Biggers building on Hillcrest. A big part of the renovation of Biggers, or the rebuilding of Biggers, will be to give us more room. We are busting at the seams. I just finished teaching Sunday school, and I went to my office, and there's a ring of chairs right outside my office, and there's a bunch of Sunday school kids in Paul's office, because we don't have enough room, do we, Elizabeth? We're busting at the seams. So we need to build new classrooms across the street. If we can move our youth program over there, we'll have more room over here to accommodate more children, more babies. So that's one main reason. The other main reason is to retrofit the building and design it for special needs ministries so that we can meet the faith needs of these very important individuals. So we look forward to moving forward to make that goal a reality. Some of you are aware that Harper Lee, the author, just passed away a couple of weeks ago. She's best known for her book, To Kill a Mockingbird. I remember how moved I was as a child to see that movie. If you remember the book or the movie, you know that it's about a small Alabama town told through the eyes of children. Two children of a small town attorney, Atticus Finch, Jem and Scout. And so they're going around the town and they're narrating. And one of the logistics in the neighborhood was Boo Radley. Boo Radley was an adult who lived in a house but never came out. He never came out of that house, and consequently, they had all sorts of stories about him. He was a monster. He ate squirrels. He caught cats and dined on them. He had taken scissors and stabbed his mother in the leg. All these stories that these kids, and so they were afraid of Boo Radley. They also were fascinated with the prospect of meeting up with Boo Radley. So they would try to go and knock on the door, or they'd leave little gifts for him, and he in turn would leave little gifts for them as well. And so there is this symbiotic relationship going on between Arthur Radley, who never came out, and the kids. The story culminates in which the children are attacked by Tom Yule, who is angry at their dad, and he tries to harm them, kill them, and Scout is wearing this milk bottle costume. She can't really see what's going on. She knows her brother has been attacked and he's broken his arm, but somebody else came on the scene and grabbed Tom Yule and killed him with his own knife and then escorted them to Atticus Finch's house. And when they're asking Scout, what happened? She said, well, somebody came, somebody. And then she looks behind the door. And in the movie, it's played by Robert Duvall, his first movie role. See, a very pale, very recalcitrant individual hiding behind the door. And Scout looks up and says, hey, Boo. And she realizes that's Boo Radley. Now, he may have had some behavioral issues, or he may have been a special needs individual himself, but they saw him as some sort of monster or demon, but he actually turned out to be their guardian angel. He'd looked after them and cared for them, and she saw him in a different light and took him by the hand and walked him to his home, never really to see him again. Sometimes that's all it really takes, is to reframe and see people in a different light. And she said, as she's walking off their front porch, which she'd never had the courage to stand on before, you know, my dad is right. Sometimes you just need to walk in somebody else's shoes in order to truly understand them. Here at this church, we believe that when we remove barriers to come and attend and worship in the name of Christ, that we ourselves become closer to Christ. And now, in order to show you, not just tell you about, but to show you about our special needs ministry, we have a video to show you.
Every new day of life holds opportunities for all ages. But for one group of people, these opportunities are much more difficult to take advantage of.
Luke is an 18-year-old fabulous son with Down syndrome.
Katie's disability is cerebral palsy. She was born at 28 weeks and weighed 20 ounces.
Charlie had a pretty normal delivery. He has what's called cortical dysplasia. Basically, there's a part of his brain that just doesn't work.
We worried a great deal about where would Luke fit in, what kind of life would he have, what kind of joy would he have.
I think the biggest worry for us was the unknown, from schools to how we lived our daily schedule and then church.
Katie can never be left alone, so there's always got to be someone with Katie. So I've got to make sure that I have the help needed to be with her at all times.
But can you imagine a place where our families could drop us off twice a month for nights of fun?
When we heard about Night Owls, it became the opening door to us for Luke to have an avenue to get to know Christ, and more importantly, for him to feel connected to Christ through a church.
Can you imagine a place with Sunday school classes where we could learn about Christ? Can you imagine a place where we could be in a real theater troupe?
Jester's has been a great experience for Katie. I had never been to a performance before, and I was completely blown away just with the talent and how they took every child and adult and made them a part of the play.
Can you imagine a place where we could get away from it all? Where we could escape from everyday life, bond with our families, and get some much needed rest? Can you imagine a place where we could worship the Lord and our families in a service designed especially for us?
It is so uplifting to go into the feast service. We're all there for one purpose, to worship and to sing praises and to love on each other.
Can you imagine a place where we could sing, where we could be in a real choir and lift our voices to the Lord with beautiful songs?
The special needs ministry at Highland Park United Methodist Church has offered our family a chance to be connected to a church.
We have lasting friendships that we've made here from the time Katie was 3 until now.
We can now come to church and actually focus on our spiritual development.
It just gives us a place where we're safe.
My faith is rock solid today because of Luke and the journey that we've had as a family at this church. And I cannot tell you how thankful we are to be able to have that and be part of this church.
Can you imagine a place so wonderfully special? I can't.